The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde.
I'm Ross Reynolds. David, do you recognize that theme music?
Is it Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch?
Close. It's actually from a BBC show called Sherlock, about Sherlock Holmes. The third season of the show premiered last Sunday on PBS.
Just one of the many recent shows and movies that Sherlock Holmes has been portrayed in by hundreds of actors over many decades. But why has this character resonated so much with so many people over the years?
To find out, we talked to Tom Keogh. He's an arts and film writer for the Seattle Times, and he's been giving an arts lecture on the cultural staying power of Sherlock Holmes over this past year. Our esteemed colleague Marcy Silman asked Tom, where did the original Sherlock come from?
It came from Arthur Conan Doyle when he was just starting out in his medical practice and not doing very well. He had always loved writing. And so really just to kind of put some food on the table, he was selling short stories to small magazines and that kind of thing, small newspapers. And then in early in the year, 1887, he wrote a short story called The Mystery of Uncle Jeremy's Household, in which he introduced two prototypes of Holmes and Watson. And then toward the end of the year, when he was fishing around trying to think about what he was going to do next, he decided to expand on those characters, and that became A Study in Scarlet, when introducing Holmes and Watson to the world.
So that was the first dual story with that pairing.
That's exactly right. And as far as Doyle was concerned, that was it. He wasn't thinking about writing any more than that. And what happened next was that he had some success with a couple of other novels that he wrote, and so his ambition was really to be taken seriously as a literary novelist. But what happened was that he was invited to a dinner, which he was asked to, by the publisher of an American magazine to write something in the range of 40,000 words that could be serialized. And out of that came The Sign of Four.
Mm.
So from that point, you know, Holmes was here to stay.
He was here to stay for Doyle, but then he sort of became like a public domain figure. When did that start to happen?
It actually happened in Doyle's lifetime, because at that time, the right situation in England was that somebody could take your character and build original story material around them. So your character wasn't sacred, but your story ideas were.
So you couldn't copyright the antagonist or protagonist of your story?
That's right. That's what happened. And so what happened was that Doyle began to see other writers, playwrights, writing plays and parodies and so on. So already in Doyle's lifetime, we had alternative versions of Sherlock Holmes going on. Doyle actually sort of contributed to this himself, in that in the year 1893, the same year he killed off Holmes, or intended to kill off Holmes in the at Reichenbach Falls, he then wrote a five-act play called Sherlock Holmes, which he then gave the rights to an American actor and director named William Gillette.
I would certainly like to know what you propose to do with that counterfeit package. I intend, with the aid of the counterfeit, to make her willingly hand me the genuine. I shall accomplish this by a piece of trickery and deceit of which I'm heartily ashamed.
William Gillette went on to play Holmes 1,300 times over a number of years. It was really synonymous with Holmes. But he brought his own additions to the character as well. So a lot of the things that we associate with Holmes now actually came from William Gillette.
I think I always thought of the first popularized Holmes as Basil Rathbone.
You didn't trap me here. I came here because I wanted to. To prevent your getting Hoffner. And all you can do in return is to commit ordinary murder, to relieve your sense of frustration.
And what, my good Mr. Holmes, could you have conceived that would have been so much more colorful?
Well, even offhand, I can improve upon your suggestions considerably, but that's only natural, of course.
That certainly came later.
Later.
Yeah, they came later on. During the war years of World War II, they pumped out something like 14 movies over 7 years, I believe it was. And about midway through that, they decided to take him out of the late Victorian era and put him in the World War II era to fight Nazis and so on.
Yeah. I guess he's a very adaptable character. I'm talking with arts writer Tom Keogh. As far as I understand, more than 75 different actors have portrayed Sherlock Holmes?
It's more than that. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's in the three digits. Yeah.
Three digits.
Yeah.
What is it about this particular character that's so appealing either to actors or to theater and cinema makers?
Well, part of it is that he's you know, Holmes is a genius and a specialist, and like all specialists, he, you know, gives us a sense of confidence because he's someone who can look at something inscrutable and tell you the who, what, when, where, and why. And I think we always take comfort in something like that, whether it's a doctor or a scientist or something who can tell us things that we don't fully understand. At the same time, Holmes pays a certain price for his genius. He's certainly a dark character. He's a misanthrope and eccentric. He has foregone certain kinds of experiences in life the rest of us take for granted, like relationships and love and romance.
In some cases, he's a drug addict too.
He certainly had a profound drug problem when he was young. So all of those kinds of things are appealing, I think, to actors. At the same time, we really only know Holmes primarily through his proximity to Watson, but except for a handful of stories in the canon that Doyle wrote. All of the stories are told through Watson's perspective. And so that puts Holmes at a bit of a remove from a reader. He's never really a whole cloth character. The actor Jeremy Brett, who played Holmes in the 1980s on a wonderful British television series, he once described Holmes as a mosaic. And that's exactly right. You have to stand back from the mosaic to try to get a comprehensive sense of who this character is.
So for you as a writer of film and a reader, what do you find appealing about the character?
What I find appealing about the character is that he writes his own rule book as he goes along. You know,
something we all want to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, you'll find stories in which Holmes really sort of sets himself apart from the law or even above the law, making unilateral decisions about, you know, how people should be punished or not punished, that kind of thing. And there are stories where you see flashes of enormous passion that you don't see elsewhere. There's a story in which Watson is wounded by a villain, and Holmes really loses it and basically threatens to kill the man then and there. So you see things in Holmes that I think are quite interesting and apart from what we usually think of when we think about that character.
I suppose there's been a whole lot of Sherlock Holmes lately. Most recently, Benedict Cumberbatch's portrayal on PBS, which has just started again, although three parts doesn't really make a series.
Yeah.
For those of us who really like the thing, who do you pick out as Sherlock Holmeses that you've enjoyed or that you think really nail the character?
Jeremy Brett really nailed the character, and then he was intent on trying to be as faithful to the canon as possible. Whenever there was a question during filming about, you know, what should we do, he said, "Let's go back to the text.
Give me problems. Give me work. Give me the most abstruse cryptogram, the most intricate analysis, and I'm in my proper atmosphere. Then I can dispense with artificial stimulants. But I abhor the dull routine of existence. I crave mental exaltation. That is why I've chosen my own profession, or rather, created it, for I am the only one in the world."
Yeah, I think his portrayal was spot on. At the same time, he became ill during the making of that series, and he had heart problems, and he kind of bloated up and looked quite dark. And rather than try to pretend that wasn't happening, he actually incorporated that stuff into his performance. So he kind of took Holmes in a different direction, and he gave it an integrity, but it was certainly apart from Holmes in the canon.
What do you think of the modernization of Sherlock?
Well, Holmes? I love Cumberbatch's performance. I love that whole show. The thing I love about it is that despite the fact that it's set in a modern era, and you know it has modern technology and all the rest, it is so faithful to the spirit of the canon. That it can afford to have a lot of fun with the letter of the canon as well. And that's exactly what they do.
I've been too slow. She didn't have a laptop, which means she did her business on her phone. So it's a smartphone. It's email enabled. So there was a website for her account. The username is her email address. And all together now, the password is...
Rachel. So we can read her emails. So what?
Anderson, don't talk out loud. You lower the IQ of the whole street. We can do much more than just read her emails. It's a smartphone. It's got GPS.
They take multiple references and mix them up and mash them up and reverse them just to see what happens. It really is glorified fan fiction.
I think that's how it started, if I've read carefully.
That's exactly right.
There's also a series that I think is in its second or third season on ABC or CBS. I haven't, it's on too late for me, but
right.
it's Elementary, I believe, is the name of it.
Right.
Do you think that that is equally faithful?
No, it's not. And I have to say that after watching the first few episodes in the first season, I stopped watching altogether. And I kind of took a look at it once or twice last season, and it appeared to be improving, but I'm still not that, you know, intrigued by it.
What keeps you coming back to Sherlock Holmes, to the whole notion of the guy?
Well, I it's good to go back to the original stories every once in a while and sort of remember who Holmes really is as Doyle conceived him. At the same time, you know, Holmes was a deliberately underdeveloped human being. You know, he made choices in his life like almost like a monk makes choices, you know, to not have certain experiences in order to focus on a mission. That really makes him kind of almost blank canvas for other people to then come around and presume to give you their interpretation of Holmes. And so what I like to see is, you know, really smart storytellers who can do something, you know, wise with that. One of the things I love about Sherlock is that they're, as I said, they're so faithful to the canon, even as they are playing with things and experimenting with things and taking things in a different direction.
So lastly, we've been talking about cinematic stage portrayals, television portrayals. For folks who've never read any of the actual Conan Doyle works, what do you recommend starting with?
I would recommend starting with Studying Scarlet and working your way through. You know,
would you recommend them all?
I would recommend them all. Yeah, if you're only just going to kind of, you know, stick your toe in, then I recently taught Hound of the Baskervilles to a bunch of middle school students, and it was good for me to kind of not only reread it, but to talk about it to people who had never read it before. And what was fascinating about that for me was that, you know, there's that whole side of Conan Doyle's life that had to do with spiritualism and a kind of conflict between, you know, his interest in the paranormal and the fact that he was such a rationalist, you know, a very methodical, scientifically minded man. And I see that duality, that battle sort of working itself out in The Hound of the Baskervilles. And in a way, Holmes sort of resolves that for him.
A lot of us got to see that at Seattle Repertory Theater over the holiday season. So it's kind of fresh in the mind. I mean, we really have it all from Robert Downey Jr. to Benedict Cumberbatch to stage versions to back to the source. It's always good to go back to the source.
Always good to go back to the source.
Thanks so much for coming in, Tom.
Thank you, Marcy.
That's Tom Keough, who's a Seattle Times arts writer. Longtime listeners might remember him as our one-time film reviewer on KUOW. He was talking to Marcy Silman. This is The Record on KUOW.